I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. It used to be when you applied for a job, employers checked your references and reviewed your experience and called you in if they liked what they found. But it's not quite so simple anymore. Now you have to make your resume stand out to a computer that eliminates you from the applicant pool if you're missing specific, important descriptions. And your background better be spotless or close to it. If not, the place you're hoping to score a job with will know about it. More and more companies are hiring outside firms to do deep searches into applicants' references, credentials, and even criminal records. Plus, if you're looking for a new way to spend the hours between 9 and 5, you might want to keep that information away from the boss. Keep your job hunt quiet. It's Up to Date, following this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. If you're having trouble finding a job these days, there might be an issue that you're totally unaware of. Background checks. These days, with more and more people applying for every opening, employers are struggling to separate truth from fiction when it comes to cover letters and resumes. Some are hiring companies that specialize in reference and background checks, and it's pretty amazing what these companies can find out about job applicants. The companies check work and education histories, dig up lawsuits, criminal credit, and driving records. In the end, unfavorable data is returned in about half of all reference checks. Today, a conversation about background checks and how that's changing the search for a good job. With us today, Diane Stafford covers employment issues for the Kansas City Star. And Diane, welcome back. Always good to have you. Jeff Shane is Executive Vice President at Allison & Taylor in Rochester, Michigan. The company works for applicants, helping individuals learn what former employers are finding or saying about them. And Jeff, nice to have you too. Good morning.
A pleasure to be on the show, Steve.
Well, Diane, what's changed out there? Because, you know, I thought it was a fairly common deal to call up an applicant's former employer and just ask what kind of employee they were. Why do we need companies to do this sort of work now?
In some cases, you can still find a former employer who will talk about the employee, but in many cases, the lawyers that tell the human resource departments what kinds of policies to follow tell them not to give out anything more than the dates of hire, perhaps the title, the salary upon departure, and maybe in some instances they'll go so far as to say whether or not the individual is eligible for rehire. And what that means is that if they are eligible, that means they might have left on their own, they might have been okay. If you get a no answer to that question, that might mean they were fired.
Well, why is this happening, Diane? What's changed out there that's causing companies not to be so mum about their former workers?
They're afraid of lawsuits.
What else, right?
They're afraid that a disgruntled applicant might find that something negative was said about them and sue the company. Will they win? Probably not, because they have to have an actionable cause. They have to find out that they were libeled or defamed, or that in some way something negative was said against them in terms of pregnancy, race, sex, age, all of the actionable things. But the fear of the lawsuit is a very motivating factor. Nobody wants to spend time and money to settle a case before it goes to court.
Jeff Shane, how reticent are most companies these days to talk about their former workers? What's your sense?
Far less reticent than you might think, Steve. As Diane points out, the common impression is that a firm will and should only confirm former employment dates and title. The reality is, of the many thousands of reference checks that Allison and Taylor has conducted in its 28-year history, about half of those are coming back with some form of negativity. So the answer to your question, simply put, is many employers either are not aware or are not concerned that their negative commentary could in some way, shape, or form come back to bite them.
Now, what kinds of things, Jeff, do these former companies say that's so negative? I mean, what's wrong with being candid?
I would I would answer your question this way. There are two tying into your comments, Steve and Diane, about possible legal remedies. We see two types of negativity conveyed in the reports that we generate. There is negativity that is potentially illegal, such as defamation of character, discrimination, wrongful discharge. And in those circumstances, the person getting the negative reference may indeed have remedy to take legal action against the company. In the other bucket, if you will, there is negative but not necessarily illegal, including much of what you're describing as candid commentary. Even so, while it may not be illegal, it is always inappropriate because virtually every company out there has in their policies and procedures manuals something to the effect that we will only confirm dates of employment and title. And they have that for their legal protection, as you alluded to earlier. So a reference should not be giving any negative information whatsoever about a former employee. And again, the ramifications are if they do, there may be legal action available. And if it is not illegal, there is still always the prospect of a cease and desist letter, which we can discuss shortly, which is always an alternative to someone that has received a negative reference documented by a third party such as Allison Taylor.
You know, Jeff, I don't mean to bang on this too much, but tell me again, so why is it wrong for a former employer to be candid about the performance of an employee who's seeking to go off and work elsewhere?
Well, some would argue that it's not wrong at all, that they're simply giving, you know, honest input based on their experience with the candidate.
Right.
But I would argue wrong in the sense if you were the CEO of your company and you have someone in your organization that is giving candid input, perhaps it's absolutely true in every way, shape, and form, there is, as Diane alluded to, the possibility that the person getting that negative reference, if they were able to document it, could take legal action against the company. And any CEO type or officer of the company is going to do anything they reasonably can to assure nothing like that happens, which again ties into why supervisors are taught to or instructed to refer requests to HR, and HR is almost without exception instructed to only confirm dates and titles. So it's not so much a moral call as far as, you know, whether it's right or not. It's a call of, you know, what is legally well advised for any company that is being asked to give a reference.
Diane?
The workplace is not a monolith, however. Large companies may be lawyered up. They may have human resource departments that get all of the requests for reference checks and have very strict policies that they follow. But a lot of mom-and-pop organizations don't have professional HR people, and it's entirely possible that in many cases it's still possible to get a reference check. It just depends the kind of organization that you're dealing with.
Well, Diane, what does this do to the work world out there and employees shifting from one company to another if employers can't give recommendations one way or the other on employees going off? What has that done to the whole world of interviewing and looking for jobs? And it puts an incredible burden on the company that's hiring, doesn't it?
The negative phrase used is pass your trash.
Yeah.
If you can't find out the really bad apples and you just keep passing them from barrel to barrel, that's bad for the workplace. So that's why a lot of people like Jeff's organization are helping employers as well as employees themselves to try to find out what people will say about them. And you have to point out, too, that things like LinkedIn and Facebook and everything, that's a treasure trove of information about people. So every reference check does not have to go through official channels. A lot of it can be done around the edges. And in every community, HR people know each other.
Yeah. Well, Jeff Shane, again, Vice President at Allison and Taylor. So you work for employees who want to find out what's being said about them, right?
We also work for employers
as
well.
You work both ways.
As Diane alluded to, the majority of our clientele is indeed individuals, employment seekers, but we can and do also work on behalf of corporate hirers who are using us to screen typically finalists for a given position.
And Jeff, how do you work? How do you find out what one's references or one's former company is saying about a potential worker as they go out looking for a new job?
Well, the client or candidate will advise to us who they want checked as a reference, whether it's a corporation, whether it's an individual. If it's an individual, typically they are concerned most likely with their last place of employment, and or they may already have a gut feeling based on their experiences who the negative reference might be if there is one within their organization. So often they have a suspicion already of someone that might be inclined to give a negative reference. And so they instruct us who we are to contact, the reference seeker, then contact that person, that organization, to document what kind of commentary we will receive.
So what do? You just call up that person, the reference, and ask, what are you saying about Diane Stafford as she looks for a job these days?
We would call Steve, and we indicate when we are working on behalf of the client, we indicate we're conducting a professional reference verification. So the party on the other end, typically a former supervisor or HR where they used to work, their impression will be that we are working with someone looking to hire that former employee. And that is extremely credible because there are countless companies out there that do not do the reference checking themselves. They outsource it for reasons of cost or privacy to a third party, such as Allison and Taylor, when we work on behalf of a corporation.
Mm-hmm.
So that introduction will not pose a surprise, if you will, to the party in whom we're soliciting the information.
And you just ask them flat out, what did you make of Diane Stafford as an employee of the Kansas City Star?
In so many words, we pose questions such as, can you enthusiastically recommend Diane? Is she eligible for rehire? And if not, why not? What were the circumstances why she left the company? What are her strengths and her weaknesses? Is there anyone else at the company we should speak to about Diane? Those would be examples of some of the questions that we would pose.
And again, as Diane Stafford is saying here, Jeff, in many cases, these companies won't give you much of a comment, right? They'll just say, hey, we can confirm that Diane Stafford worked for the Kansas City Star from this year to this year, and maybe her salary was X amount, but that's all we can say.
And you're correct, and that is indeed all that they are supposed to say. And sometimes that is a relief to the reference seeker. Sometimes the reference seekers are hopeful that all that the reference will do is confirm dates and title. Other reference seekers are convinced that negative commentary is being given. Those kind of reference seekers are candidly hopeful that we will uncover some evidence of negative input so that they can use the report that we generate to take action to try and neutralize that kind of commentary.
So if you do get a negative commentary from a former employer, you report that to your client, and then it's up to the client to pursue further action?
If they wish, that is right.
Yeah.
It's also important to note that even the tone of voice in a small or mid-size organization where a person who's listed as the reference actually knew the applicant, the people who work for Shane and companies like that, they can listen for tone of voice, and that tells them something, even if the actual words don't say something.
That is an excellent point, Diane, and I would be remiss in not mentioning that is also something that we document in our report, Steve, is the tone of voice utilized by the references. Diane suggests if it's hesitant, negative, discouraging, that can speak volumes, and employers will pick up on that.
Hmm. Well, if you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're wondering, what do you make of this new practice of extensive background checks of potential employees? Is it going too far or not? And should credit histories be part of the mix that an employer looks at? We want to hear your comments. 816-235-2888. Our email address is updatedate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. Diane, I guess this also works from the other way, that the companies like Jeff's work for employers looking to hire new people, and they actually help these employers fact check, I guess, cover letters, resumes. Tell us about what goes on in that part of the business.
Well, unfortunately, it's been documented that since the recession began and unemployment got so much worse, that there is a lot of resume fabrication going on. Some companies are finding, I think Jeff said that already, as much as 50% of resumes screened have some kind of lie. People fabricate degrees that they didn't have. They take titles they didn't have. They elevate salaries that they didn't have, all in the effort to look better. And so it's really to the employer's benefit to try to figure out. And then even things like criminal histories. If you're hiring someone to be a home health care worker, you don't want someone with a history of theft. If you're hiring a bartender, you don't want someone who's had several DUIs. So there are a lot of factual things that are important for an employer to know. One thing that a lot of applicants are rebelling against right now is what you mentioned, the credit check, because long-term unemployed people have fallen into negative economic circumstances, sometimes through really no fault of their own. And so the idea that an employer is looking at their credit number and deciding whether they'd be a worthy employee is very upsetting to a lot of long-term unemployed applicants.
Jeff, is that figure right, that roughly 50% of the cover letters and resumes you look at on behalf of potential companies that are hiring have one problem or another attached to them?
I could well believe that, Steve. The 50% figure I alluded to was the 50% of reference checks that we conduct that come back with some form of negativity. Mm. I haven't seen a specific as far as the percentage of resume miscues or resume fraud, but I would certainly agree it's quite high. And I would point out that aspect of our service works both ways for employers and for employees. Employers, because it allows them, even if they get a name, rank, and serial number approach from, an HR person, the HR person will virtually always confirm the title and the dates of employment. Mm-hmm. So it gives the corporation an opportunity to verify that aspect of their resume. Similarly, if you're the job seeker, you may have had a position some years ago. Perhaps you don't know the exact dates. Perhaps you're crafting your own resume, and you want to be sure when your references are checked that they will validate the information that is on your resume. Another good reason sometimes to have a reference check done if you're in doubt of the dates on your resume, because as Diane suggested, if an employer sees dates that are not accurate, very often that's the end of the story as far as your consideration with that company.
Well, Diane, given this, what's your advice out there to job seekers about the need to be accurate and honest and truthful when it comes to what they put in cover letters and resumes?
You said it. Be honest. Be truthful. Because if there's any kind of background checking going on, the truth will probably come out. It's also important that if you list a reference on your resume, that you have contacted that individual ahead of time and said, hey, look, I'm applying for work. Here's what I'm applying for. What will you say? Or can I count on you to speak to my qualifications in connection with that application? Don't list people who don't know they're listed, because if they get a call out of the blue, they might stumble, they might sound negative. And you might not even be listing the right person for the kind of job that you're going for.
But what if you're applying for a job and you're listing a reference, as most people would, from their current employer, and you don't want your current employer to know that you're out looking for a job?
Well, again, the workplace isn't a monolith. You should first know what the general posture or attitude within a company is for someone who's looking for a job while employed. In some cases, if they find out, they're going to say, thank you, this is your last day.
Can they fire you for that? Can you be fired for looking for a job?
In the workplace that isn't covered with collective bargaining agreements and things like that, you can be fired for any or no reason at all.
Mm-hmm.
You can be, because employers are concerned about the loss of clients or proprietary information. So, yeah, there will be some workplaces that if they find out you're looking for work, they will say, thank you, this is your last day. But as to your original question, it's more important that you let the prospective employers know that you are conducting your job search quietly.
Mm-hmm.
And you would prefer that your current employers not be contacted for a reference check until they are at the point, the prospective employer is at the point of giving you a job offer. Again, that's ideal. It doesn't always happen that way in the real world, but that's about the only way you could try to protect yourself once you list a reference.
Jeff Shane, what are some of the most common areas that applicants tend to exaggerate on cover letters and resumes? And to try to puff themselves up just a little bit to help them get across the threshold for a new job?
They do. One of the most common things is to basically embellish your credentials, suggesting that you were more instrumental, let's say, in a new policy or some aspect than perhaps you actually were. Suggest that you were more of in a management or supervisory capacity or catalyst role, as opposed to maybe simply being one of the worker bees that contributed to the effort.
Yeah, and your advice would be what, similar to Diane's, don't do it?
Yes, don't do it, because the truth will often come out, and sometimes it even comes out. We are aware of people that have been hired and subsequently let go after being hired. And some of these people have, you know, relocated for positions for a new job, and then, you know, 2 weeks later find out that a delayed reference check, somebody they couldn't reach, got back to them and basically cut the ground out from under them there. Then we've seen that more than a few times. So, yes, honesty definitely is the best policy, and I would second Diane's comment about one of the most most important recommendations I would make to any job seeker is be proactive in doing your due diligence first. And that includes, number one, speak with your prospective references, as Diane suggests, make sure that they're on board. And for any that are not, in particular, any that are reluctant, hesitant, or say flat out they're not going to do it, consider a reference check with those, because sometimes you cannot manage the people that are going to be contacted. A company may say, may we contact your former supervisor? If you say no, that is a red flag. If you say yes, and you didn't get along particularly well with that last supervisor, they may torpedo you every time. So you're in a difficult situation there. You need to know exactly what are they going to say, and use that, if it's negative, to manage an opportunity to discourage them from doing it again before you lose too many opportunities.
Well, lots of questions here this morning about background checks, job searches at 816-235-2888. Our board is full right now. Option two is to send us an email, update@kcur.org. Marie from Olathe, good morning.
Good morning. I will direct my question to Jeff. You did mention a cease and desist letter. Would I need to contact an attorney to do that? Do I do it myself, or how does that? What's the next step after that?
Explain
what a cease and desist.
Number one, no, don't do it yourself. That's fraught with danger for a variety of reasons. Your options would be, yes, you could either contact an employment attorney who could give you guidance on that, or our organization, Allison and Taylor, we also offer the cease and desist service, and we do a great many of them. We work with attorneys who are very competitive in price, which is critical because the majority of our clients are unemployed, and any expense like that typically comes at a very bad time for them.
Hey, Jeff, explain why someone would want a cease and desist letter. What's that all about?
A cease and desist letter is probably the most common tool for addressing a negative reference. Why you would want it, as we talked to earlier in the show, not all negative commentary is illegal. When it is, yes, you might be able to use the report to take him to court, and many of our reports are used for that purpose. However, where it is not illegal or where the client getting the input doesn't want to roll the dice, if you will, in taking somebody to court, a cease and desist letter is extremely effective in neutralizing negative references. Simply put, the way that it works, an attorney, one of ours or one that the client works with, would send a strongly worded letter, typically to the top person in the organization where the negative reference is employed. It would make reference to the person giving the negative reference and indicating that if they continue to do that, then remedial or legal action would be taken against the company. The CEO types that get those letters do not want any whiff or danger of action taken against their company.
Right.
They will take the least resistance. They will talk to the negative reference and remind them that all they should be doing is confirming dates and title, that those comments are putting the company at risk, and don't do it again or else. So I will say also, when Allison and Taylor performs that service, we do, as part of the follow-up, 1 month after the letter goes out, a recheck with the original negative reference. We use a different consultant, different everything, so they don't make the connection with the company that contacted them before. I have yet, knock on wood, Steve, with all of these that we have done, I've never seen even one where a negative reference did not change their tune the second time around to "I can only confirm dates and title," exactly what they should have done the first time around. So they are extremely effective.
Marie, thank you for the call. Bill from Grandview. Bill, you're on Up to Date.
Well, good morning. Interesting story. Diane, your article yesterday about getting resumes attracted by computers was very interesting. But mine is a little turn of the tables. How do interviewers know, those people who are looking for jobs, know that they're dealing with credible, honest companies? How do we know? Is there any way to check out hiring practices where maybe a company puts out a false ad on a job that doesn't exist only to find out what's out there? Any trends towards a company not wanting to interview anybody over 50? And I've been on a job for a long time. I have no axe to grind. It's just more a contrarian question. How do you protect the guy who people are out looking for jobs?
Sure. The internet is your friend as well. There's so many chat rooms and just discussions out there. You start Googling the name of any company, you'll probably find some dirt. But if you are really, truly looking to apply somewhere, I would suggest going to some of the job clubs that meet around town in the Kansas City area. Johnson County Community College has probably the largest and most regular ones. But the people who are veteran job hunters, they get together and they talk. They can tell you who's doing what. And it's a very good place to get insight into the hiring practices of various companies in a town.
If I may, then, there's really no formal process like protecting the employer to hiring someone as it is to protect people who are being hired by companies. Is that what you're saying?
Well, there are things like calling the Secretary of State and making sure that there's articles of incorporation so it's a legitimate company. There's things like the Better Business Bureau. There's Angie's List. You know, there are a lot of resources that are there to say whether or not this is a viable company, and you should always be very, very aware of any company that pretends like they have access to a secret job list, or, you know, they're going to take $6,000 from you and find you a perfect job. You know, you don't want to do that. That just doesn't exist. But there's just, you start, you know, Google. Just Google.
All right. Thank you.
Bill, thank you. And Jeff, we just kissed this idea a few minutes ago about now potential employees being checked for their credit scores. That struck me as just a whole new twist on this thing, because back in the old days, I don't think that used to happen. Is that fair game in your estimation, Jeff?
Yes, it is. And it is on the ascendancy. It's a maybe the second most popular trend we've seen, the first being more of a trend away from or in addition to using HR as reference checks and more often going directly to supervisors. This is on the part of former employers who realize that supervisors tend to be more talkative and know the employee better. But coming up quickly on the heels of that is indeed the use of credit checks, something that Allison and Taylor can do. The good news is any job seeker is entitled once a year to a credit check with any of the big three, so they can generate their own report and see what kind of figure they have. But yes, there are more and more organizations that are now incorporating that into the overall screening process.
Now, Diane Stafford, you mentioned the concern that longtime job seekers have here because their credit scores might be dipping as their savings evaporates and they have trouble paying their bills. What do you make of this, credit scores being part of the game now?
A credit check isn't going to matter to some employers, but if it's a job that involves handling money, the operative theory is going to be that, well, if you cannot manage your own finances, how can I trust you
right.
to manage ours? It speaks to perhaps just judgment. That may not be fair. As we've discussed, long-term unemployed have had significant cuts to income and may indeed have credit problems, and not all employers will look at that. A lot of it depends on the nature of the job.
We received this email at uptodate@kcur.org. We all probably understand the growing frequency of including social media accounts and activity checks in employment screening. Last week on Fresh Air, the author of a book about online activity tracking using cookies described the use of them to reveal exactly what people are up to online, and it doesn't even require one to be connected to social media. It can reveal what kinds of things one searches for and looks at online. It got me wondering if there's any use of such information in the employment screening process, Jeff.
Yes, employers are increasingly using social media as one additional tool to screen employees.
And even searching what I look at online when I'm at home?
I would say anything that they can reasonably get access to, they will do so. Many employers will, especially in this challenging job market when they often have many good applicants, and they feel they can afford to do the due diligence and spend the additional time looking at every possibility and nuance, any aspect, including social media. If you're the job seeker, you should not overlook the possibility. And the flip side of that is the job seeker has the ability themselves, as Diane used the phrase, Google, 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 early on in the process. It would behoove anyone to go into something like LinkedIn or Facebook and see what kind of information is floating out there about them that could perhaps be accessed by a prospective employer.
Diane?
Well, what's so interesting is that when you're on LinkedIn or Facebook, you're encouraged to join all these different groups because that's what expands your network of contacts,
right.
and that's the best job hunting tool there is. So the fact that people are going and peppering their own personal websites with all of this information is a direct insight to who you are. Are you a gun lover? Are you a pet lover? It gives employers a lot of information.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our very good conversation here about background checks and job searches. We'll talk about an article Diane Stafford just wrote in the newspaper about the need for job seekers to write resumes that not only catch the human eye, but catch the eyes of computers, too. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And welcome back to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. If you're trying to chase down Friday's conversation with the DVD gurus about the movie's love affair with cars, you can find it online at kcur.org. And tomorrow we'll air my conversation with former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, who spoke Friday at the Truman Library, and his talk was interrupted very early on by hecklers, and it was quite an afternoon. This hour we're talking about job searches and background checks. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Our email address, uptodate@kcur.org. Let's go to Mark from Tonganoxie. Mark, you're on Up to Date.
Well, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
My question is, I've got a fairly long work history, and it's in a particular field that I've been doing for quite a few years, too. But several of the past employers that I've had, which I did have at fairly long terms, have gone out of business and or moved completely out of the area. And I'm just wondering, what do you do in a case like that?
Let's go to Jeff Shane, who's Executive Vice President at Allison & Taylor. The company works for applicants, helping individuals learn what former employers are saying about them. Jeff, go ahead.
That's a very good question, and we see quite a bit of that, actually. So the first thing you need to determine is, when they went out of business, it's because they literally went belly up, or did they go out of business as in the sense that they were acquired by another organization? If they were bought out or merger, something like that, where another company took over responsibility for the original entity, then the records from that original company will migrate to the company that has since purchased them. So be aware that your records in that scenario would transition to the company, and so you need to know if they were bought out, then an organization such as Allison & Taylor can ascertain, did the records migrate to the new company, confirming your dates and title as they should have, and maybe even comments left in the file by a former supervisor might also migrate. So be aware that that's a distinct possibility. If the company totally went out of business, then it's a little more challenging, and in that scenario, while it might not be possible to identify a reference giver within the organization, you might still have stayed on good terms with a supervisor, somebody you worked with, so it might be possible to use somebody from the past as a reference. If not, what evidence do you have, maybe personally, that you worked there? Do you have old W-2, W-4 forms, anything that you might have? It's a good idea with every employer when you leave. See if you can get a written letter of recommendation on the company letterhead that you can use, you know, at a later date for any purpose such as this.
Okay. Mark, I hope that helps.
Oh, very good. Very good. Yeah, that helped a lot. Thank you.
Good luck. Yeah.
Thank you.
Susan writes us with this email. I've been applying for academic teaching jobs for more than a year with limited success. One, at what stage of the process does a company or school perform a background check on an applicant candidate at time of application? After interview, if interview is done, or right before an offer is made? Two, she wants to know, how often does a potential employer Google a candidate to determine the veracity of someone's application statements? Is that method a valid technique for rejecting someone's application, Diane Sawyer? Diane Sawyer, Diane Stafford.
Generally.
You look like Diane Sawyer.
Again, the workplace is not a monolith, and an applicant has no idea when the employer is going to begin to do a background check. But if rules are followed, when you are being seriously considered as a candidate, you will be presented with a form that has you sign and acknowledge that a check is being conducted. Sometimes the cart goes before the horse. The applicant honestly does not always know.
Okay. How about her second point here? How often does a potential employer Google a candidate to determine the veracity of someone's application statements, Jeff?
We don't
frequently.
Know.
Yeah. Frequently, I guess, would be the best way I would put it. There is no way of knowing for sure, but it is certainly on the ascendancy over what it was. And let me add also to Diane's previous comment there, because we see a lot of trending in our 28 years. The emphasis was previously very, very strongly on the reference being done at the end of the process. That is still the case, but we are seeing more and more of them being done up front. The logic, I think, being that rather than put someone through a second, third, fourth interview, including the management people requiring to conduct those interviews, the logic goes, let's do the reference check early on. If it doesn't pass muster, then we haven't used the time of any of our people in considering a candidate that isn't going to pass muster at the end of the day. So you can never assume either way. It's a good question.
Let's go to Ron from Kansas City, Missouri. Ron, you're on UpToDate. Good morning.
Yeah, thank you. We're a contracting company, and we do several things, all of which can be potentially very dangerous. And in the last few months, I've let go of people who had done contracting work for us who, frankly, showed up on the job under the influence of some type of substance, usually alcohol, sometimes marijuana. And I have let them go on the spot. the problem is they'll call me back later and then ask if they can use me for a reference. And even when I've told them no, I will get calls from other prospective employers. And I feel I have a duty to tell them that, you know, they have shown up under the influence and they've put other people at risk. And I was wondering just what are the ramifications for me doing that or not doing that. And before you answer that, just one other statement is I realize the unemployment's up and I realize a lot of people are looking for work. But my experience is some part of this 1% or 2% that's over our normal unemployment rate, some of those were marginal people to begin with, because I have a heck of a time finding really good, motivated workers who will show up, give their best effort, not bring their personal problems or their drug and alcohol problems to the workplace. So,
yeah.
And I'll take my answer off the air.
Ron, that's a great phone call. And Diane, doesn't Ron have a moral obligation to tell another employer that, hey, this employee could be problems for you?
Well, that's the argument that we would use to say, why are they protecting so much information anyway as a matter of policy? He is perfectly within his rights and reason to say, I let that person go for cause. And even if he wants to amplify and say, I let him go because he showed up drunk, that's not anything that's going to get him in trouble under the law.
If you want to get technical here, though, Ron can't prove someone showed up drunk unless he's doing a breathalyzer. Why isn't he asking for legal trouble by saying what he's saying then?
Well, is that person going to go to an attorney and find an attorney that's going to take the case and spend the time and the money to prove that he was defamed or, if it's in writing, libeled? It's such a small percentage that, you know, it's the question of moral obligation, I think, is where it ends up. How do you feel? What do you want to do to the next contractor down the road? Do you want to help or hurt?
Yeah. Jeff Shane, how about this email from Bill? Lots of people are putting a credit freeze on their accounts to limit fraud and ID theft. What is the impact of a credit freeze when a potential employer attempts to perform a credit check?
I would say the employee should first ascertain, is the credit check going to be one aspect of the overall analysis of their application? If it is, the applicant might consider proactively advising the company to which they're applying, you know, what they've done and why they've done it. And if they put it in the context of, you know, identity fraud concerns, et cetera, then an employer will surely understand or should understand that there may be indeed very valid and good reasons why someone would want or need to go to that level.
Yeah.
So,
Okay. Great phone call. Again, our number here, 816-235-2888. We're talking about background checks and searching for new jobs today. What is your opinion of rechecking existing employees' backgrounds when there may be questions regarding their educational credentials and or alleged issues with criminal charges, one emailer writes. I'd also be interested in your comments on the practices of screening upper-level executives. Many times top execs bounce from place to place based on their performance, scandals, etc. Is the criteria and treatment, Jeff, of executive job seekers the same as non-executive level job seekers? And if not, what should change?
The treatment is very similar. The difference is we use a slightly different report for executive types, whereas most of the reference checks that we conduct are done under what is called the professional level reference check. We do have an executive level report which poses additional questions regarding the candidate's supervisory, team building abilities, etc. So it is more thorough in the sense that it poses additional commentary and gives therefore the party conducting the check the opportunity to see or to reveal additional aspects of the candidacy.
Diane Stafford from The Star, hop in here.
Many executive placements are done through executive recruiters. Headhunters is what you call them in the vernacular. And the headhunter's reputation is on the line to the employer who's paying the headhunter's bill. And that is, I am bringing you good candidates. So there is another level of scrutiny that's given to executive caliber applicant or candidates. The headhunter has done some significant research before it gets to the employer.
Yeah. We talked earlier, Diane, about the secret to conducting a job hunt in secret when you don't want your employer to find out. What tips might you offer there that people might consider?
Well, it's very difficult to conduct a job hunt in secret because that goes in the exact opposite of the number one rule of job hunting, which is you cannot job hunt in secret because so much relies on interpersonal relationships. So again, it depends who you are, where you work, what kind of job you're looking for. But if you desperately do not want your current place of employment to know you're looking, the best thing to do if you know you're getting to a candidate position for another job is you tell that prospective employer, please do not call my current references until you're ready to make a job offer because it would cause me great harm if they knew I was looking. There's also, at a certain level, a high place, a kind of executive recruiter caliber position, you can also submit resumes without your name on it. That doesn't work for Joe Blow, applicant for most jobs. But when you are being represented by a headhunter, sometimes it is possible to distribute your resumes without your name and place of employment on it. So the prospective employer is looking at all your other credentials and deciding whether you're a candidate that they want to pursue.
You know, and speaking of resumes, Diane, you just wrote in the newspaper about the need for job seekers to write resumes that, as I mentioned, not only catch the human eye, but catch the eyes of computers, too. What's that all about?
Well, again, it depends on the workplace. In some large companies that have cut their human resource staffs, they found it is more cost efficient to have a computer screen the resumes that come in their application process. And they're going to be using the computer and algorithms and other computer sounding terms to look for specific phrases. If a job description says we are looking for someone who has multifunctional team experience, those words better be on your resume or the computer isn't going to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are some tricks, supposedly, to get around it. Some people say that you can embed on your resume in white type so that it isn't visible to a human eye all of these key phrases.
Oh my gosh.
And the computer will find them and put your resume in the pile to be considered. Now, that's a theory that may or may not work. But the point is don't just sit and spray the landscape with a resume. Make sure that you rewrite your resume to include every important phrase that a job description says so that you have a chance of being selected for the in pile.
Jeff Shane, are applicants actually going that far and putting secret coding on their resume so a computer picks things up?
That's a new one on me. I learned something new.
I'm glad
new
to hear that.
Day.
It was
so
on me, too.
So thank you, Diane. But certainly she's absolutely correct about the importance of what we call keywords that reference writers are using or should consider using for the very reason that computers, et cetera, that are scanning these will pick them up. The single biggest mistake that we see, and we offer resume critique and writing as a service at Allison and Taylor, too many people are simply in their resumes describing what they did as opposed to emphasizing their accomplishments. Normally, we're taught don't honk your own horn. In the context of a resume, good idea to honk your horn, but be darn sure that you're not embellishing. There's the fine line that we talked about earlier. But put the emphasis on what you truly brought to that organization, because that's what companies are looking for. What are you going to bring to the party, to our company, if we hire you? And so by touting your accomplishments, and what I favor is early in the resume, very early in the resume, indicate maybe a section along the lines of professional highlights. And you could recap briefly and say bulleted form, half a dozen, eight of your key accomplishments of which you're most proud, maybe awards, promotions, metrics that you increased sales by X number of percent. And by listing those very early on, you improve the chances that yours won't be one that's put in the circular file very quickly.
Diane?
It's also very important to avoid jargon within the profession, because if a computer isn't looking at your resume first, it's a good chance that some initial lower-level human resource person is screening the resumes. And if they don't understand how what you have done in the past fits with the needs of the current job, they're not going to put your resume in the in pile. It's unless you're in a smaller, mid-sized, smaller company, your resume is probably not going to be read first by someone who's a specialist in your field. So you have to be very careful that you can convey your information and why you're perfect for this job to whatever the first eyes are.
Jeff Shane, is computer input error sometimes a factor in all this?
In most any and all context, yeah, it can be. The most insidious where computer error could be a problem is in the background check. As opposed to the reference check that I have been predominantly describing, background check is generated normally by an independent third party. We conduct or generate background checks as well at Allison and Taylor, and we, like most employers, utilize a third-party database organization. Now, the one that we work with advises me that the vast majority, mind you, of negative input that comes through on background check is the result of somebody maybe in your earlier career fat-fingering a Social Security number, making some administrative slip. That's very critical because many of our clients will say, oh, background check, criminal history, bankruptcies, mine will be as pure as the driven snow. And then they might find out to their horror that there is something in that report which most people never generate in their lifetime. There might be something in there of which they have no knowledge that may not even be accurate. And unfortunately, when a prospective employer runs that report on you and all they need is a Social Security number and maybe date of birth, they will not come back and tell you your background check did not pass muster. For their own legal protection and convenience, they will most likely either not call you or say, we've made other arrangements.
Well, that hour went by very quickly. I'm sorry we couldn't get to all our phone callers today. Ashanti, Angela, and Steve, sorry about that. We'll get to this topic again sometime before too long. Jeff Shane, Executive Vice President at Allison & Taylor, thanks so much for your time today, Jeff.
It's been my pleasure,
sure,
Steve.
Sure, appreciate it. And Diane Stafford with the Kansas City Star, always good to have you too, Diane.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks. You can find guest bios, archives, and podcasts of our programs all at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Tomorrow on the program, an interview with former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. Our music is by Bobby Watson and the UMKC Conservatory of Music Concert Jazz Band. We had help today from Danny Alexander, Kim Noble, and Maria Carter. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.